Right, so this is about formulas to scale, and this is, I really want to just kind of touch on some kind of practical stuff that anyone can apply in their businesses if they choose to scale, because remembering scale is not for everyone, right? So I want to start with Benji. So you've got this really rad framework, and if you are taking notes, suggest getting your pens out and stuff like that. Craig from Pringle Bay in Cape Town. I'll take your question in a second, dude. But can you share, what is it called? And just walk us through the headlines, because I really love this as a framework.
Oh, my formula. So we heard Clive earlier, it was 4 P's, 4 C's, 4 E's. I think it's a consulting thing.
Must be.
So I have the 5 E's to scale. And it's a very new thing, so if I kind of forget halfway through, just let me be here and blonde. So firstly, have an explicit purpose. So be very clear on your why and your what you're trying to solve and what you're trying to do and why you're doing it. And it's a big addressable market and all these good things. Then have an effective model. And what I mean by the effective model is it makes financial sense. And you're going to reach sustainability sooner rather than later. Because the sooner you can fund yourself, the better, and bootstrap and all those beautiful things. Then I would say the third one is execution. No, what did I say? Execution support. And that is truly just being having the right team behind you, executing very quickly and very fast. You don't always need to be perfect. It just needs to be done. To quote Sheryl Sandberg, just get it done, because done is better than perfect. Why? Because then you're first. If you're first to market, you can ideally stay ahead. So that's a very viable one. And then there's enveloped competition. So enveloped competition is what I mean by you actually work with your ecosystem. You work with other startups, maybe in your own space. They could potentially be competitors, or they could be supporting technologies. And also, like I said, we started an insurance play. That's a neighboring industry. So it's competition. And what that did is it opened me up to a whole bunch of other CEOs that are willing to introduce me to my core client CEOs. So enveloped competition is very key. And then just emotional resilience. Being an entrepreneur is pretty shit at times. Okay. I'm a lot skinnier than what I was when I was at BCG. I don't eat fancy dinners anymore with my clients. So sometimes you just need to drink a whole lot of cement pills and maybe all kinds of other pills, but you need emotional resilience. It's not for the faint-hearted. So yeah, those are my 5 E's to scaling or just to building a business.
Clive, thanks, Benji. I really love that. Clive, can we just get your views? Like, is there a formula to scale? I mean,
absolutely.
Is there one? Okay, what is it?
Absolutely.
So I'd love to know what it is.
I think, you know, it's important to know this. You know, maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, there was no playbooks about how you build businesses. You know, you just have to go out there and trial and error and pin the tail on the donkey or whatever you call it. That's the way you built it, trial and error.
Can you find the formula on Google?
Let me tell you where you can find the formula. So in my very first few years at Accenture, I was mentored and trained by the guy who started the EO organization, a guy called Vern Harnish. Now, he's written a book called Scaling Up. And I've probably, as I said, maybe it's not quite 100, maybe it's 90 businesses, but fortunately in my consulting life, I really worked in Silicon Valley and Israel and India and all over the world building these startups and used the same formula. And I had a strategy session with one of my companies. Now we've just bought and we did exactly the same thing. There's 4 things to scaling a business, besides what Benji said. I absolutely agree with what Benji said. But for me, when you scale a business, number one, you've got to scale people. Because what you have to do, most entrepreneurs, when you start as an entrepreneur and you've got a 3-, 4-, 5-man business, you're the sales, you're the marketing, you're the ops, you're the tech, you're the everything. And you take out the dustbins, and you do the finances, and you do everything. That's not scalable. You cannot scale that. So there's 4 things. So let me go through the 4 quick, and I'll come back to what each of them mean. First, you've got to scale team. You've got to scale team. You've got to hire leaders into your organization, not followers. People that you can delegate to and they will get the job done. And if you don't hire leaders, it's going to end up on your plate and you're just not going to be able to scale your business. The number thing, second thing you've got to scale strategy. Strategy is team. Number 2 is strategy. Number 3 is execution. Number 4 is cash flow. So if you don't get those 4 things right, now the first 3, in all honesty, you can sort of get right, that can be okay. But the 4th one you don't get right, you die. Because why do most businesses fail? It's a symptom of a problem, but they run out of cash, they can't pay payroll, and they're dead, and they go out of business. So those four, if you can understand those four things, get the team right, hire the best team on the planet. You have to get the best team. So typically what you find is, and I found this from my experience of all these businesses I've worked in, people when they hire for lack of weaknesses. Now, I think what's absolutely critical when you hire people in a startup, you hire for strengths, not for lack of weakness. So if you want a marketing person, hire them for the best marketing person. It doesn't matter if they're the biggest schlemiel, but you hire them because they're the best marketing person. But what we find in most people, they just hire for lack of weakness. So what you've got is someone that's sort of okay at everything, but actually good at nothing. So when you scale a business, your team, you've got to find the best marketing person, the best sales person, the best ops person, the best tech person, the best finance people, the best et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's absolutely critical. You know, they say that one great hire is equal to three average hires. And from all the businesses I've worked in, it's absolutely true. You might pay them 20% more, but you get 5 times productivity from the right people. So what I always say to people and what I've learned from my business, hire slowly and fire fast. What do we normally do? We hire too quickly and we never fire because it's hard, right? Wrong answer. You've got to be able to hire slowly and you've got to fire fast. So you've got to build that best team. Hire for strengths and not for lack of weaknesses. And what you've got to do as the CEO, if you're the founder, if you're really good at marketing, then, and you're not good, and you've got to accept the maturity that I think Benji talks about, is to know what your weaknesses are. If you're not great at back office stuff, which I'm pathetic as an example, hire the best CEO that can go and do the job for you. So, because it's stressful. It's stressful to try and do work that you might even be good at it, but you don't enjoy it. It's stressful. It takes your time. It actually stresses you out. And in all honesty, it doesn't add any value to the business. Number two is strategy. You've got to find a differentiated strategy, both a short-term strategy and a long-term strategy. It comes back to your mission statement and your vision statement and blah, blah, blah. But you've got to know where you're going to be. Because if you don't know where you're going to be in 5 years, any road's going to take you there. You've got to have a BHAG, what they call in the consulting industry is the big, hairy, audacious goal. You've got to have that. That's a McKinsey terminology. You've got to have that BHAG, and then you've got to work towards that BHAG. Because entrepreneurs remember success. When you day one you start a business, you know, in 5 years' time, I'm going to be a billion rand business. You think success is a straight line from where you are today to where it is. What it actually does is this, and then down and up and sideways. Success, that's unfortunately the way it happens. But you need a good strategy to do that. Third thing, you've got to have flawless execution. Absolutely brilliant execution, because at the end of the day, if you don't execute correctly, for one, you're going to learn by trial and error, and it's too expensive. And whether it's your own capital or whether it's a venture capitalist money, no one wants to pay your school fees in terms of execution. You've got to surround yourself, I think like Benji's done, with a very, very good team. And not necessarily even your full-time team, just your advisors. You know, one of the things I learned in business many years ago, you know, if you can stand on the shoulders of giants that have been there before you, find those people that have walked that road. They've made all the mistakes already. They've got all the scars on their back. Just find out from them. If you can do that, you can compress what it took them years and years and years to build up. And you can compress it into months, weeks, days, even hours. You can compress that 20, 30 years of learning into 2 hours that takes your business in that straight line instead of that squiggly thing and doing it. And lastly is you absolutely have to watch every cent you spend. You know, they say you must watch people how they spend their money in the good days, because that's how they're going to spend the money in the good days. That's how they're going to spend them in the bad days. And frugality for me as a venture capitalist, or even every business I've built, I've always been frugal. Whether it was a million rand business or a 100 million rand business, you build it frugally. You don't need to drive the Rolls Royce. When you exit your business like Kia just did, they'll drive their Rolls Royces now, in all honesty. But that's the four things. There's playbooks out there. There's the lean startup. Guys, there's enough good stuff out there. You don't have to reinvent this wheel. The Steve Blank stuff, the Eric Ries stuff. I'm sure you entrepreneurs have all heard that stuff. It's brilliant. What I like to see as an entrepreneur, everyone says the business plan, I want to see a business plan. I actually don't care about your business plan. I might want to see an exec summary. I want to see your business map. I want to see the business model. Then I understand you know your business. You know how you're going to get customers, how you're going to make money, you know who your channels are, who your distribution channels are. That to me is far more important than a 75-page business plan, which I guarantee you, and I'm sure I've got ADD, I will never read, and I never have. Ask my CEO who's sitting over there. And I can't read 3 pages without going into a stressful situation. So you've got to know don't waste your time writing these 100-page business plans. They're important, but they're important for you to understand how you're going to get from A to B. That is important, but not for a venture capitalist. They're honestly not going to read the stuff.
Love it. Kids, do you own a Rolls Royce?
No, I'm not a car guy. I'm more of a Harley Davidson and a boat guy. So no.
Jeez, so you got cash and you're cool, hey? Wow, what's the third thing, dude?
there's nothing more. Listen, so I think I agree with all of it. Maybe just add, not to repeat. I think for us it's very important from a scalability perspective. The really only thing is looking at the execution ability of an entrepreneur who has a good product and a hell of a large market for that product. Then from our perspective, we start with the end game in mind. We really need to figure out where this is all going. I mean, Clive alluded to it, but just to kind of really add, for us, it's not so much about goal setting and this and that. It's really about sitting down with the entrepreneur. Generally, we take them up to the West Coast in our due diligence and basically literally sit down and ask them, where is it that you personally want to be? And I forget now that you're pitching to us or whatever, as a shareholder in this business or future common shareholder, what are we doing? Where are we headed? Because, I mean, you can't develop strategy, whether it's now scaling aggressively and that, without understanding what you're aiming for, because that then becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy, which you might or might not get right. But every journey ends, and that journey in our venture capital strategy life is the journey where this business, we either sell it back to management, it dies, or we give the shares back to the guys saying, look, this opportunity cost, this thing's going nowhere. For us, managing this business on the board is too much. So, you know, have your shares back, and we all agree that the VCs lost money on this one. Mainly from a South African perspective, a strategic exit, so a sale to a strategic partner. But we need to figure out what that is, because, you know, then we can say to the entrepreneur, listen, okay, so we know that because we've been there. We know exactly what we're going to do in the first couple of days after exit. We're going to wake up from our hangover, and then we're going to maybe release a press release or whatever. And then before that, we're going to stress about some condition precedent, some legal issues are going to creep up. We're going to fight around escrow and whether it's South African law or Delaware law, or how all that's going to work in there. And the 3 months before that, there's going to be a sell side due diligence. We're going to be fighting with the IP lawyers coming down from Switzerland or from wherever they come from. You know, we've had a few from mainly from those interesting companies mainly Europe, but Delaware or wherever. And we're going to fight with them around, is this IP really worth something? And then and that brings us back to today. So today we need to do certain things so that we have some poker chips on our table, not to bring that letter of intent figure of a few million dollars down to less million dollars. And we are going to give you those tools. But if we're not on the same page, then maybe you're just a good business and not a VC investable business. So my last point about this, and I don't have the 5 E's or the 4 T's or whatever the case may be, but the Startup Genome Project really tried to look at why startups fail to scale, and really looked at those things. And they couldn't find it back to the DNA of startupness. They basically found that it's because of the lack of 5 things not growing at the same time. So the scaling a business is not just about scaling the hell out of a business. It's about scaling 5 things at the same time. And those 5 things are the customers, the product, the team, the business model, and the funding. So you can't scale the team too fast without having the money to pay them or a plan for that. Or you can't have too much money and not knowing really what to do with it. Or, you know, the business model need to be right. But if you can kind of more or less grow those 5 things in the same proportion to each other, then you're on the route to a scalable business that can execute.
Love it. Thanks, guys. That was rock star stuff. Does anyone have any questions for the panel before we move on to the final section? This gent here. Okay, go for it. Just hold the mic close to your mouth, please.
Cool. Can you hear me? So I have a view, and the panel must agree with me, but I don't think anybody should go to VCs for funding. I have a different view on it, and people will be like, why the hell are you still entertaining the VCs if it's at a low valuation? I like to think of it as, if you want to get into a nightclub, they use money as a filter fee. Just because you've paid for university admission doesn't mean you got the degree. So the same way you would have a co-founder, which you give 20 or 30% equity to because they would do heavy lifting for you, I think you should look at the VCs in that way, that they bring the experience and they open the networks and distribution channels, and they are paying for the right to effectively be your co-founder. And so they should not be your first point of funding. Once you've made it, you should go to them as a strategic co-founder. That's at least the way I look at it. So then to Keith and to Clive is to say, am I batshit crazy or am I on the right path?
I think I would like, amen. I would love to think you're on the right path because it'll help me with my valuation debates with the businesses. But just to echo that. So we had we invested in a business recently called SkillUp, which is a sort of a tutoring platform. And we had it was about a month ago, but last week we had because we finally could get all the shareholders together. We had sort of a bit of a celebration dinner, and in the dinner speech we said to them, listen guys, we are all sitting around this table because of a certain check that we could write, so that's why we're here. But the only reason why how you're going to respect us being around this same table in a year's time from now is if we bring you clients, and we know that, and we will endeavor or try or die by the sword as any of you guys as a semi adopted co-founder. So I think from that perspective, you don't want to overplay, like we're going to overpromise and add so much value and all the rest of it. But yeah, people come to us because there's perceived money, but people believe in us and grow with us because we can actually bring them market access. And that's the only thing that counts.
Can I just add one thing to that, Kit? And I think you alluded to it earlier about you found a great business the other day. They ticked every single box except the valuation box. And my advice to entrepreneurs, in all honesty, and particularly entrepreneurs that have been to America and seen these absolutely ridiculous valuations that are taking place in the US. Now, when you've got a $5 billion fund like Sequoia, in all honesty, to put $10 million into the thing is actually too small. It's like the petty cash change. So we're not American VCs. We don't have that sort of capital. We cannot. If you want to raise that sort of capital at that sort of pre-money or post-money valuations, go somewhere else and try and raise it. But I think the point Luke made here is a very important point. It's not how much equity you own. It's what the end value of your equity is. That is the most important for you as an entrepreneur. Now, I don't know if it's the same deal that Keir's talking about. Had to walk away from a deal the other day. Great deal. Loved everything about this deal. I mean, every single box was ticked except the valuation was double ours. And we were so far apart that I just said to the entrepreneur, you know, we're so far apart, it's actually no use even having this conversation. And we actually walked away from the deal. And in all honesty, if I think about the channels we could have opened to this business, I think if they'd taken our valuation, then in a year, their valuation would have been double, triple, four times what it would have been. But unfortunately, not everyone, I can say that they didn't see that. So the highest valuation is not necessarily the right answer. And I'm saying this as a VC. Rather get the right VC, as Kurt was saying as well. If you get the right VC, and there's a few really good VCs in this country who can open the doors, not open doors, but help you understand how to scale a business. They can get in your strategy session. They can provide operational support, marketing, sales, everything. That's smart money, and that's the money you actually need. So if money might look the same, but let me tell you something, it's fundamentally different to who you get it from.
Ever wanted to become a best-selling author? Well, I'm in the influence business and I work with business owners and CEOs and business leaders to help them scale their influence. And we do this as a team by helping you to become a best-selling author, sought-after speaker and industry influencer in only 30 days. My team and I have developed a system that delivers a best-selling book and a launch campaign 300% faster and 50% less cost than anyone else in North America. This system is incredibly efficient. One of my clients, Haiku, went from a 2% share of voice globally to an 11% share of voice globally in only 7 days. If you'd like more information, head on over to showworksmedia.com for more. That is showworks with an X.com.